So this being the final episode of Season 2 of the Enneagram Panels podcast, I have a little intro before the intro. A few things we want to throw out. We're going to be on break for a little bit while we dream up a couple special episodes in Season 3. So if you want to interact with us or have some extra content, you can go to our Facebook page, the Enneagram Panels Facebook page. We are working on a third season, which focuses on relationship, how each type functions in a relationship, and how to best relate to that type. And we're also going to have a couple special episodes as well. If you've been exploring the Enneagram and still don't know where you land, the best way to find out is to have a typing interview with Joel. You can contact Joel through his website, www.joelhubbard.com. And the link is also in the show notes. And you can set up a typing interview for $150, and it will really set you in the right direction. So that concludes my intro to the intro. Make sure you subscribe so you can see when the additional episodes come out. And now let's get on to the official show. All right, welcome to the final episode in Season 2 of the Enneagram Panels podcast. I am Jim Zartman, and I am here with Enneagram coach Joel Hubbard, who is what this panel is, which is the Type 7.
Yeah. I wondered how this would be for me as I listen to other 7s talk about themselves, because it's difficult sometimes to see yourself when you're in your type, you know, and it's so interesting to watch how other people, I mean, I can see what the motivation is. I can go inside, but to observe my sort of patterns and behaviors really takes other people's observation as well. This panel has some real insight to the Type 7, in part because I know one of them has been working on his type for quite a while. And the other one is still fairly new to the Enneagram, but has made some significant progress in realizing what goes on with the 7. When the 7 has this need to constantly be in motion, to run, to look for the fun, the new, the different, the interesting, this constant need for more is called the vice. It's called gluttony. And when I first heard that, I thought, gluttony? Well, yeah, I love food and I like to eat a lot, but in what sense? And then it clicked. Oh, right. I tend to see life as a buffet. And so I want to consume as much as I can, particularly things that are interesting. So for me, it's a lot of it is what's interesting I go after.
You used a phrase that stood out to me so much when you were explaining that made so much sense of every 7, when you said always consuming, never digesting.
Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of that because wow, that's still kind of, even as you said it, it's like, oh yeah, I just felt that deep inside me. Like that's something I'm not, that's something I still struggle with. I've grown a lot, but that's really where the challenge is for me, is the need for more, because there's never enough. There's just never enough. So 7s are sometimes seen as the shallow types because they tend to seem like they're always having fun, playing, you know, running after some new thing and not serious, never really taking themselves too seriously. But one of the things that I love about doing panel interviews is you get a variety within that type. There are no two of the same type that are the same. It is remarkable how different they will live out their lives. I've heard some Type 7s who actually like to finish projects where the majority of 7s don't. I've met 7s who are introverted when the majority of 7s are not, right? So this is why it's so important to really listen to all kinds of different types or different people within the same type and listen to their stories. And so 7s can appear sometimes shallow, but then you'll find some other 7s that appear very deep. But we're all struggling with the same thing. And the core motivation is we don't want to deal with emotional pain. And so we feel generally like we are missing something, that there's not enough nurture in the present. And so we lean way into the future to try to grab a hold of something that will satisfy us. The more we consume, the less we actually digest. And so we're constantly feeling that emptiness return. And if we're even aware, most of the time, sevens can keep running at such a pace that they never even feel that emptiness because they're planning all the time for the next adventure, the next thing that they want to do. They're distracting themselves, and that keeps the whole system functioning. So for the seven, it's really learning to move towards sobriety, getting away from the consumption and actually denying yourself, putting limits on your life. And then when they do that, there's this remarkable settling and peace and rest that enters in. But that's the work, and that's always going to be the work for the type sevens.
The word sobriety carries such a larger connotation than anything to do with substances.
That's true.
And I think the seven really has that to teach to the world. When sevens do their work, they can be a voice for sobriety.
Yeah, for sure. And I appreciate you saying that because the thing with the seven is we can become addicted to anything. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be an idea. It can be a new concept. It can be a sport. It can be alcohol. You know, when we, as you said, when you think of sobriety, you think of substances. You think generally of alcohol or drugs. And sevens are just as prone to those things as anybody else is. But the thing with sevens is that even if you took away the drugs, even if you took away the alcohol, the sevens will find something else to be addicted to because we just love consumption and love grabbing onto things. The part of it that's interesting, though, is that sevens also resist addiction for this reason. We fear limitation. We fear being held down or held back by anything. And so when we start to feel like something may be gaining too much control in our lives, we bounce. So we can appear to have broken addictions, but actually what we're doing is we're swapping addictions.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's becoming aware that sevens are so surreptitious. That's one of my favorite words. It's the ability to kind of circumnavigate a lot of things, to be stealthy, not to come right out and do bad things, you know, to confront or to create conflict. Sevens will go around the back door. So we're consuming, but we're consuming in ways that oftentimes people don't see. So sevens, you may think, oh, well, you guys never attach to anybody or anything. What do you mean you're consuming? Are you talking about the world around you? No, we're consuming everything, including people. But the thing is that we're not doing it in the most obvious ways. And so for us, it's really coming clean and being honest about I'm consuming because I don't feel like I have enough. So now I'm going to put some limits in my life and that I'm doing out of trust that actually I already have everything that I need. And when the seven becomes convinced that that's true and begins to practice that, then they realize they can move towards sobriety. And actually that's what it starts to look like is self-limit. The ability to say no to things that are fun, that are life-giving, you know, that are energizing, and then begin to do good work, like hard work and stay present to people and finish things. So that's a lot of what sevens have to work on. These panelists I am so proud of because I know both of them really well. And I've watched them do this very thing, of put limits in their lives, begin to do good work, accomplish things, and not just be a jack of all trades, which sevens are, and actually become really good at certain things that they need to become good at because that's their gift to the world. And sevens can really do some amazing things in life if they can practice some self-limit and moving towards, you know, sobriety.
It's amazing. A friend of mine who's, I think, a pretty healthy seven, who used to be an alcoholic and is now a sobriety coach, she has this capacity to use language and she has this capacity to help other people do their work in a way that has joy in it, which is what a really unique gift of the seven is, not just to doing the work, but to get to the point where they do the work and there's joy as a result.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, I laugh because that's oftentimes what my clients tell me is, first of all, you're not judgmental and you bring me joy. You make me happier. I'm not sure why that is, but yeah, it's again the thing that the Sevens can do, but the Sevens need to do their work, or otherwise they're just bouncing around. They're that distracted Jack Russell, you know, one of those little dogs that just bouncing around forever. And so if they can settle down, do their work, they can actually provide the world with that gift of joy and be present long enough to make impact on the world around them. And so that's been my own personal work, and I continue to do that. And again, these panelists here that you'll hear from are dynamic, and both of them have done lots and lots of work, and some significant results in their lives are happening now because of the work that they've done.
And Sevens are already wonderful to be around because they're a lot of fun to be around. But man, when they do their work and they add the depth to the fun, they are just an incredible gift and a light to everyone around them. And so we're very, very thankful to all you Sevens out here. And thank you so much for coming along on another season of the Enneagram Panels podcast. So we will now jump in with the Seven panel.
So some of the questions I want to talk about is related to these issues of distraction and how easily we can be distracted. So let's maybe start with that. People think all Sevens have ADHD. They don't, but it does appear that way because we can easily become distracted by something that seems interesting to our minds. So our minds long for interesting things, fun things, things that grab our attention. So there's an upside to it, of course. But the downside is it can be very difficult to stay present to people. It can be very difficult sometimes to finish one project at a time. How are you doing it? What are some hacks maybe that you've learned to keep yourself present and complete things that are before you?
So I did this, the Enneagram, like a couple years ago. We did this at Straight Ahead. It was funny because we started doing it and I couldn't believe it. I started reading this stuff. I was like, oh my God, that's me. And so it wasn't hard to figure out that I was a seven. But one of my biggest challenges was getting distracted a lot. It's like I'm always on to the next thing. Like I get excited with something new. Like, let's just get something up and going, and then you can take care of it from there. That's why me and Danae make a good match, because she usually finishes everything off of me. But I did remember, though, when I got my results back, they showed like a healthy seven, and an unhealthy seven. And one of the things was that to really become more of a healthy seven was to really just at least 1 hour a day, give myself some time just to kind of settle down and just kind of be present in what's going on around me. And kind of like take things out of the cloud and just kind of get them grounded and like set a course and things to try to finish them out, because otherwise I'm all over the place. And so for me, the thing that's helped me a lot is just to really get grounded. And so I do, you know, whether it's, I start off with just prayer and just kind of ask God just to kind of, you know, come into my daily life, like what do I got going on right now that's unfinished, or some other things that maybe I can put off until later. Because I got a habit of like taking some things sometimes that really aren't that important, and I make them super important. And I'll let, you know, just kind of push other things aside. Mm-hmm. And so it's funny, Danae's all the time, she's like, you know, it could have waited 2 more minutes. And so I kind of get a chuckle out of it. I'm like, no, it couldn't have. I needed to do it now. And yeah. So for me, it's just kind of getting grounded on a daily basis. That's really helped me out a lot.
I just think about like the laundry in my house, and I say to myself, okay, I'm going to do it all on this day. And then something else will come up that seems a little bit more interesting. And then I start deviating to that. And then here we are on Thursday, and I'm still doing that first load of laundry because I got distracted, but I had plenty of time. So that's still a work in progress, but I've been trying to set myself a goal. And the goal is to get this done by this day. And if I can do that, then I can stay on task. But if I don't do that on Sunday, say, okay, this is what I want to get done. This is the one thing I want to get done by the end of this week, then it won't get done at mm-hmm. all, because I have many other things that I want to do that seem a lot more fun and interesting.
Yeah. You're sort of setting yourself like, this is my deadline. It's a self-imposed limitation and deadline. Yeah. One of the things I want to address is how oftentimes we end up doing things because other people expect it, or we're doing it because we're supposed to do it, right? And then we cheat on the other side and we go after something that really feeds us in some way, you know. We might binge on some other thing like sports or something else, right? What are some things that you have been doing? Say, well, this is actually the way I'm made, and it's a good thing, and I need that, and it's actually helpful to me. It makes me a happier, healthier person. But then also, then having those limits as well to say, okay, enough of, you know, I like, you know, in your case, fishing, but like maybe talk about that process as you're starting to discover also who you are, how you're made, and some of the good things about that, as well as learning how to put some limitations in your life.
Yeah. So limitations, that's interesting. I don't know what it is now. I just feel like when I'm pushing the envelope too much in a certain area, it could be like fishing, it could be work, it could be in anything. I don't know what it is now, but I get like this gut check inside of me. And I think it's like the Holy Spirit kind of just like speaking to me, just kind of telling me to slow down a little bit. Because there's a lot of times I'm like full steam ahead and I can easily drop the ball in other things. But I've just kind of got to a point where I feel like I'm at a good point where it's like kind of a healthy balance of everything. For me, like you said, I kind of come to a point I'm like, you know, I used to think there was something wrong with it or something wrong with me or just like, you know, like, do I got ADHD or, you know, why do I like to be involved in so many different things? But what I've definitely done was narrowed down like certain things and rather than being involved in a lot of different things. I mean, I remember for an example, years ago, we used to play softball at the church. And so it was just like, here we go, all off of softball, you know, and then it's like all off of fishing and then it's like all off of this. But, you know, this is just a small example, but I had to come to a point in my life, you know, sitting there with Danae, she's like, you have to choose one or the other. And she goes, you can't do both. And so I'm just like, oh, okay. And so that was kind of like my first like kick in a rear end type of thing. Like, you know, you need to put a balance here. And so just kind of learns like, let me just do only a few things and do them well rather than kind of spread myself thin and do things just okay. And so now I just stay focused on my main thing is like relationship with God and then really making sure that I'm paying a lot of attention to my family because that's like the biggest thing. And so like, you know, really having a healthy balance between work and my family life. And then my hobby comes afterwards, you know what I mean? So when I keep them things balanced, I feel like, you know, things are really well. And I found like I felt like now in my life, I've come to a really good balance with all that. But again, you know, talk to me in about a month now when there's a lot of big fish around and I'm going on four nights in a row fishing. And so there's times where I still kind of go over the edge here and there, but I know when to reel it in, literally.
Reel it in. But one of the things I wanted to come back to, because I think you made a great point about this, and then I want to hear from you, Nicole, is one of the things that is also very well known about Sevens is they are jack of all trades, masters of none. So what Jay just mentioned is like you said, becoming really good at certain things. So it's a key indication of like health, like moving towards health is recognizing I can continue to be like involved in a million different things and be pretty good at all of them. Because sevens tend to have that capacity of doing a lot of different things and being pretty good at a lot of different things. But then there's this like desire that starts coming up in us after a while of like, I'd like to be really good at a few things, like really good at a few things. And that's what's happening, it sounds like, in your life, which is really great.
You know, one of the things was a big game changer, I think, in Danae and I's relationship. You know, the sevens, anytime somebody's complaining or somebody's down, it's like the first, I'm like, I don't even want to hear it. Like,
yeah.
Let me get away from that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's so insensitive too on the other side of it. It's in kind of like selfish in a sense, you know. And one of the things I learned, you know, when we were doing this, you know, a little while back was that in order to be a really effective seven is to actually sit in that moment and just allow that moment to be processed inside of you and start to really listen and engage in that. And don't shut your feelings down because my natural tendency is to joke around. Like anytime, like emotions come up and that sort of thing. It's like, I don't even want to touch those. It's like, you know, and so it's like, I'll just joke and it's my way of either pushing somebody away or just not really connecting in an authentic way with people. And so what I've been really learning is just like in those moments is to really, and I'm not saying I get this thing all the time, but I've gotten much better and really been able to pause in that moment and sit in that and just like, and really engage. And I found that it's really brought emotional intimacy with my wife and I, like just, it's just so much better than what it was years ago. It was more of a challenge with her than it was with the kids. It's easy for me to connect with my kids in that sense, but it was always a challenge with her. And so there was some other stuff that I'd do some deep digging with. But for me, I found that being able to sit and pause and engage in that has really, it's been really good.
Nice. Yeah.
So I agree, like, we are jack of all trades, master of none. And just thinking back for the last 5 years, I wanted to be, like, really involved in the school and doing things so they knew that I was present for them. And then also it felt good to me to volunteer and to feel needed and things like that. And then when we started to do this, I had to, like, kind of take a step back because it was frustrating me, the stuff that was going on with the volunteering. And I had to really say, okay, am I doing this because I don't want to let people down? Am I doing this because, you know, what kind of need does it fulfill? And am I doing this just because? And then I had to allow myself to just say, it's okay to say no. And it's okay to back away because it's only good for me. And I'm going to be a better parent or a better mother. And this year has been a good year because I've been doing a lot, but not stuff that's taking all of my energy away. But I have another focus that I feel like I've been able to balance my other focus with life and family and things, which I think has been good because I'm a happier person when I can do my other thing that I like to do. But like you were saying, like, we want to be good at one thing. And so I've been, like, on this quest to get a certain time in my running, and I've just been, like, on that quest, but still trying not to take away from the family. But it's been a lot, and so, but I don't know if I want to master it, but I'm happy with it.
But you did qualify for the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, I've been trying for, like, over a year, like, six marathons to qualify to run Boston, and finally was able to do it. But it took, like, a lot of sacrifice, but it was a good sacrifice. Like, I felt like it was good. Everybody was along. I didn't take away from too much of the family, just that I was in bed at 8:30 and I didn't know what they were doing. That was really, like, the phone call. The lights are on. Do you know where your kids are? I'm like, no, but I'm in bed.
But, you know, the thing too, though, has been even the feedback from your husband has been positive about this, that you're doing something that's making you genuinely happy. Like, in a good way, right? So that's part of the thing for sevens is we're in a pursuit of the thing that's going to make us happy. And it's always in the future. It tends to always be in our mind and in the future. And it really takes discipline for the seven to say, even staying present to things like my pain, someone's pain and emotions, even doing that is not going to rob me of this joy. Like, I'm not going to run out. I'm not going to be stuck in some dark space. And so learning to be present to your joy and finding joy in things that you actually like doing, but then also choosing joy as a sort of a habit is very, very important for sevens, I think, to stay present. Otherwise, we're pulled into the future naturally. So talk about your running, and then I want to hear about your fishing and other maybe other things that you do that are helpful. Nicole, as a mom, doing a lot of different activities with your kids, what are some practices? I mean, how's the running working for you? Are you able to do this and really lose yourself in it and find your own sort of flow and be present to yourself and happy in that space?
It used to be a lot different with the running because, like, I would try to fit it in when, you know, someone was at a sports thing, which then I would feel bad because I would miss their event or something. So I just kind of, like, worked it out, you know, my schedule. Like, I get up like super early before they even wake up and go. And then I make myself stay awake the rest of the day so we can go do stuff. Like, we have stuff planned. And then I feel like I haven't taken anything away from them because I don't want to be that parent. I don't want them to think that she was only focused on herself. And she didn't really give us any time when we're home. She was never there because she was always out running. Now, they know that I'm out running and they know when I go, but it usually they're still able to do all the things that they want to do. And I'm really happy about that I'm able to work it out. I mean, because some days I have to go out and run like 20 miles and that could be like 2.5 hours and I'm starving and I'm tired after, but it's just something that happens. Like, I still am awake and I'm still having fun with them and still doing stuff with them, still driving them around. And, you know, Claude works crazy hours and he's not home like during the day. And so everything still falls on me. So, you know, just to be able to have that balance in my brain, I guess. I mean, I feel good. I mean, I feel happy that I got my stuff done and they got their stuff done. But the other thing So when I was getting ready to run this marathon, we had to go to Maine. Two of them had an activity over the weekend. And I was getting ready to just say, well, you guys don't have to go. I'll just go by myself. And, you know, and I had to really take a step back and say, like, I'm always proud of them and I'm always at their things. And it's a good habit to show them that they have to be there for their parent too and see that they accomplished something. You know, and I didn't want to let them down, which, you know, which sevens do. They don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And their feelings were not hurt. Everybody was happy. We all had a good time. But it was a struggle. Like, it was a struggle. Like, up until, like, Friday, I think I was saying, maybe they can just, we can find someone to watch them and they can still go to their events. And, you know, anyway, and I just was like, no, you know, we're going to be together. This is a family thing. Everybody was a part of it. And so we're all going to go. And I think that that was good. Made me happy. They were happy too.
Like what Nicole was saying, it reminds me a lot too, like kind of like how she you find your time with the running. For fishing, to me, it's like, you know, I'm not sitting on the side of a pond throwing a bobber and some lily pads. So I go out usually at nighttime. So the kids are in bed. So I just feel like when I'm doing something, it's not, you know, interrupting, just like you're saying, the whole, you know, the whole family dynamics. You know, if I do go during the day, the kids are with me. So it works so well. But when I'm out there, you know, because I fish on the ocean. And so when I'm out there, it's like there's no boundaries. There's no limits. Hmm. You can literally let down every single wall in your life and just be you and just be raw. And I feel like those are the moments when I hear God's voice the most.
Wow.
And so because I'm not awesome. Distracted by anything, I can literally shut everything off in my mind. And it's like I feel like it kind of filters and cleanses my mind. And I used to kind of get guilty, feel guilty, but I'm like, oh my God. Like, but for me, it's like, you know, this is God's creation. This was created and he's put this desire inside of me. And it's like, it's the only time that he, like he created that, I believe, you know, like everybody has a different way to connect with God. And I'm not saying this is the only way I connect with God, you know, but this is a time where really like he has the ocean and the fish and all these sort of things just to kind of literally like everything just shuts off in my mind. And it's like, I just feel like it's wide open. Mm. And I usually get a lot of my answers. I'll hear a lot of different things when I'm just in that alone time of God. And if it's not fishing season, a lot of times I'm downstairs in my little man cave making my fishing lures and stuff like that. And so, and I'm, you know, and the good thing is that I get just, you know, an amazing wife that supports that and she understands the need that I have for that. So that helps out tremendously because if that wasn't there, that wasn't going to happen. But so yeah, does that answer
your question? Yeah, I love that. I think for a lot of sevens, like you said, Nicole, you can get caught up. And I mean, I hear it in you too. We don't want to affect anybody else negatively. I mean, that's generally what's going on the side of the seven. We feel like we have to sneak these little pleasures sometimes of just doing something that really feeds us. Having those things that you've discovered, both of you have discovered something that really works for you. This is really, really wonderful to hear that.
I even think of just kind of the work that I do. It's like completely lines up with my giftings and stuff like that because my job isn't a typical 9-to-5. It's like it changes all the time with just like the needs and that sort of thing. And the amazing thing is that every single week, it's like, you know, I'm bumping into brand new people. It's new situations, new things that are coming up. You just never know what's going to happen when we go inside these facilities. You never know what's happening with the kids in the streets. And so to me, it's I love it because it's always something new. It's always something like, I'm always on an adventure, always like doing something really cool. And so it's like, it's like a constant filling all the time. And so
I love that. I wish I could tell every seven this thing. And I wish I'd been told this years ago. You can fight to try to be something you're not, but eventually you're going to lose that battle. You are made with that capacity for a lot of interests. So your job should reflect that. Otherwise, you're going to feel suffocated by that process, you know. And you figured that out early on, and it's worked for you. And Nicole, you as a mom, I mean, obviously there's a lot of different things. It's not all interesting all the time, right? But there's something also very grounding, which is also very good for the seven in terms of having to be there with your kids.
And I do have a part-time job and I work with kids. I do groups for parents and children. So we meet new families every week and every week the group is different. So it's a lot of change. And I like that. Like that's like if it was the same thing over and over again, I don't think I could do it. But this one has like a lot of variety, a lot. I can make it however I want. And the kids are just a lot of fun. And, you know, they change every day. They, you know, their behavior and their attitude. And it's like a challenge to try to get them back happy again or, you know, get them into the group. And I find that, like, I thrive on that. Like, that's a little, a fun thing to do. And so.
Well, you bring up another great 7 point, which is we never like to be boring. We don't want to be bored and we don't want to be boring. Am I right? So there's a positive side to that, and that's we can be good entertainers and we can keep the thing going. But the other side of it is, and Jason, we've had quite a few years of history with this, but the other side of it is knowing when to reel that in, to know when to hold back and to say, okay, this is a good time to put the filter on. Yes, this is a good time not to say something. This is a good time not to. So knowing how to do that, but that speaks to this issue of sobriety. Like, because of the need and the interest and the love of life and that consuming thing, sobriety is really key. Like, holding back and knowing how to say, this is not the time. I don't need to do this. In other words, like, I don't have a need to do this right now is really part of the growth for the 7. I don't know if you want to say
something
about that.
It's really tough to do. I know that. I have to always tell myself, I was talking to one of the school counselors one day for something, and she's like, you know, it's okay to be bored. And I'm like, what?
What is that? Yeah.
So late, like since that conversation, I've just been like, it's okay to be bored. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. It's always some fun out there. Let's just open it up to you guys to maybe ask some questions.
All right. So you guys get distracted and you find things boring. How do you handle other people who are always on task? At the end of the day, my list is completely crossed off. But like, because I know a 7, and to get him to motivate to finish a project, how would I be constructive? Try to keep it interesting? How do I do it so I respect you and your boundaries, but like you respect that I need something done?
Yeah, good question.
I've actually come to a place where I can't stand when things aren't done, because when they don't get done, they just look horrible. I've actually learned to grow. Like, I've learned to put people that are administrative around me on my team because they make me more effective. And so I got someone that's on my team that's really administrative, like on point with, you know, just having paperwork done, this and that, really good with checking the boxes. And sometimes I'll just throw random thoughts out there and they'll grab them. And so I've learned that I need to surround myself with people with that gift. And it actually makes me better in all aspects of my life.
The 7s are wide-ranging, just as every other type is. And so there's some 7s that are actually very good at getting things done, like Jason mentioned. Some 7s actually prefer to get things done because it gets it off their mind. They don't want things sitting around in their mind and distracting them from, again, it's potentially a good time. So it's oftentimes finding out what's going on with the person you're with, and, you know, getting to know that person a little bit more, understand the type 7 they are, what's going on, why are these tasks not that important? And then for the 7 to learn to do the work of like, okay, these are things I have to get done. And if I get a list on Saturday morning, I put my own list. I'm like, I want to do this, and this. Don't bother me, because I'll fly through that. You guys, you're probably the same way. Fast movers. I mean, we go through that list and kill it. Like, I want it done and I will go 100 miles an hour until it's done. And then that gives me the permission to go and play. Almost all 7s think about play a lot. It's play before work, play during work, and play after work. It's always play. So if something's playful, it doesn't feel like drudgery, like it's killing us. Yeah. 7s feel like we will never die. They call them the eternal youth as well, because they always have that playfulness, that agility. Many of them are described as, even in their older age, as being very agile physically. There's always this vivaciousness in them to consume and to enjoy life. But unless they've done their work, like these guys are doing their work, many 7s who have not done their work look happy on the outside, but it's this running thing. It's not a deep, soulful happiness and restfulness. Yeah, it's empty. Yeah. Other questions, Gabe?
So I'm a 9, and we hate conflict. And there are definitely times where I can tell when I'm with a 7 or an 8 where I've lost you, where you're bored, or your mind is somewhere completely somewhere else. And so my question is, what is a helpful way? Because I'm usually just sort of, I'll go with the flow. You know, what is a helpful way for you that I can sort of help bring you back into the conversation? Because usually I'm just go with the flow, you know, and won't say anything.
I think if I understand your question, Gabe, is how do you, as someone who's not a seven, help a seven to re-engage if you feel like you're losing them in conversation or in interest? Is that what you're asking?
So maybe ask, what do you think about that? And then why, like, what do you mean? Like, you know, I don't think that they like dead silence, because I know I don't. And so if the conversation is going and then you might be silent because you're going with the flow, you're trying to open it up, that's when they are already gone.
They're already gone.
So.
And a lot of times, some of those friends I was telling you about, a lot of them are like deep thinkers. So some of the stuff that I say, I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm not even on their level. They don't even want to have this conversation with me. I'm so shallow compared to what they're thinking. So.
It's so funny because I feel like I'm listening to myself when these two talk, because that's exactly what goes through my head too. It's when you know your type and you get around other types, it's remarkable how the similarities are there. Like, I do that same thing. Like, I think the same thing. Geez, I must have said something stupid. That person doesn't find me remotely interesting. They probably thought that little comment I just made was like, they could tear it apart in 100 different ways because I didn't say it the right way. So I go through all of those same, and it happens at, you know, at 1,000 miles an hour. I mean, it's instant. It goes right through your mind. But I think in terms of how you might feel, if you're seeing that we're sort of evacuating the space, because we do that, sevens will evacuate if a conversation gets boring. And it's not because we find you boring. Sometimes it's because, again, we can't stand silence. You're right. I mean, dead on. I really wrestle with that. If someone's next to me and they're silent, it is highly awkward for me. And I have to fill a space. I have to create some kind of, you know.
It's like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah. Like, I'm not entertaining enough. I'm not keeping you interested enough. So you're having that in your own head. Like, I'm not apparently interesting enough. But we're having that same thought. Like, I need to be entertaining. I need to be interesting here.
That's the moment I really understand how insecure I really am.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel really awkward here. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a ton of insecurity in that space. But if you want to help a seven, that's dead on. What she said there is ask for thoughts about things. Like, what do you think about this? Because sevens are thinkers. If you ask me what I feel about something, I've now done enough work in myself where I can go there. But it's not natural. And if I'm really stressed, forget it. I'm not accessing that emotional center. So ask me what I think about something. Oh, yeah. We'll have a great conversation about that. So a few questions here. Hands popped up.
So I have a lot of sevens in my life. I think my dad's a seven. My best friend's a seven. And I'm looking back. I'm thinking like most of the relationships I've been in has been with sevens. And I'm a four. And I'm like all about feelings. Everything is feelings. And I know, like, especially with my dad, like, I know it's like when I start talking feelings, he just like shuts down. So, like, how do you have a, like, I don't want to say meaningful, but like, how do you ever get anything? It's like we never get it figured out. It's always left. Probably me.
Maybe it's not you, though. Maybe it's a seven. I would say that it's not you, you know? I would say that it's possibly the seven, because what I read was like, I'm beginning to learn the healthy seven will actually sit and pause in those moments and be in that moment with you, you know? And so I would say, like, if we're not connecting with you, it's not you. It's the other, it's me.
But early on, Jason, I mean, you know, when I first met you, definitely.
No way,
you were,
man.
Like, so this guy who you see now is, like, you know, many, many miles further in his journey than he was years ago. But like all the sevens, we don't start out there. We start out definitely running from pain, running from, you know, from those emotional centers, you know.
I think for sevens, if they are not moved up in there, it's that the pain that we can't solve it. So
yeah,
I'm just
exactly.
thinking, like, I just had a conversation with someone this weekend, and it's not a pleasant one. It's someone very close to me, and the situation is daunting, and, like, I just really couldn't say anything. Like, I was, like, dead silent while she's talking, and it's feeling like it's hurting, but, and then I just completely changed the subject, and it's a... probably wasn't the best thing to do, but I can't solve it, so I don't want to talk about it.
That's solving. I mean, the way you just said that, that's like perfect, because that explains a lot of what goes on within the seven. It's the solving of a problem. And that's why we go to our heads to solve even emotional problems. And they say of sevens, we don't really feel our emotions. We do, but we think our emotions more than we feel our emotions. So we're processing all the time, like trying to solve what just happened. You know, how do I fix this thing? Life is a puzzle. It's trying to fix and solve these things. Yeah, to your question though, Danielle, in terms of the four and the seven, it is really difficult because you're talking from two completely different centers of processing. You start out in the heart, sevens start out in the head. So when you're having conversations in relationship, it's really trying to bring two worlds together in two different languages together. And I know this to be true experientially because of how many heart types I interact with. And I realize now what's going on. It's a language barrier. So if I learn how to access and do my own growth, my own work, then I can enter into that space a little more easily. That said, fours can help sevens. So you're asking the question from like, how do I help? How do I, you know, do this even if the seven's not doing their work entirely? The worst thing you can do is to try to force a seven to access their emotions, because the seven will just go, whoop, close up. Like, you know, now you're invading my space, right? You're trying to manipulate me. I feel like you're trying to get into my world. Instead, it's to coax it out, to help draw that out. And by drawing that out, it is helpful sometimes to ask the question, how does that make you feel? And then pause. Once you've warmed up to that conversation a little bit, talking about, you know, thoughts and how do you think about this? What are your thoughts about that? And then to gently switch it. But you first start out with the head. How are you thinking about this? What are your thoughts? How do you understand this? To then move to, what are you feeling? What's going on inside without being so heavy about it? Careful on how you communicate emotion, because certain emotional types have done this to me early on in my journey as a pastor. I mean, it was only a few years ago. I remember this distinctly happening with another four who would then look at me and go, how are you really feeling? And that just throws me. That's like, whoa, you know? So then the wall just comes down. Instead, without that heaviness, without that intensity, without almost any affect, which is difficult for fours, but like, just, so how did you feel about that? Or what's going on the inside? You know, they're ready. They're going to start to talk about that. Sometimes it's even putting words to that. Do you feel this way? Do you feel that? It sounds like you're feeling embarrassed about that situation. And the seven might look at it, well, that's not exactly the word. I feel more like this. So it's helpful sometimes because you have better access to the words to describe the emotions than most sevens do.
I think the key thing that you actually said that really helped me was that a lot of times you don't feel like you can solve it. And so why go there? And so I was kind of thinking about, okay, how do I make this person in particular feel safe in order to talk about things that might have happened a while ago? But if they don't feel like it's been there, it's past, you can't solve it, then you probably don't even want to access that or even deal with that because you can't fix it. So just that little piece of information actually was really helpful. I think maybe a question would be, how do you feel safe?
So I was actually going through like this very similar thing this whole last week. So one of my best friends. And so everything that's happened. So it's like one of the things, I can't solve it. And I hate the moments because I'm like, I feel like I need to do something, but I can't. And so I literally had to force myself every day to call him, just say, hey, how you doing? How's things going? You know, like just to be in it with them. Listen, I don't know what I can do, but I'm here for you and that I'm definitely praying. And I had to literally force myself to do that every single day. And so I think that's kind of like, you know, like knowing I'm not going to solve it, but just kind of, it's like my way of like putting it out there to him, like, hey, I'm just here. And that made me like feel good, you know, like kind of like kept me grounded a little bit in the situation. Because my normal tendency is kind of like praying for him for a distance, you know, and just continue on. But I think that's, when you start to move and just kind of getting connected in spaces, it's good for me.
Would it help a seven if you preface something by saying, like, you don't have to solve this, but, you know, whatever the topic is. Would it ease a seven's mind a little bit to hear, I'm not expecting you to solve this, if you could just listen, kind of thing?
Yeah, I get that all the time. And they said, I just need you to listen right now. I'm not looking for an answer. So, yeah, no, it's definitely helpful because when every time she'll say something or if I take it as like, oh, hey, she's complaining about something again or she wants to get something done, I'm like looking to fix the situation. And she's like, I'm not looking for you to fix it. I just want you to listen. Oh, all right. I get that. I'm clear now. We're good. All right. I'm listening. But then sometimes I go, I'll just keep listening. And then like those times she wants me to do something. So I'm just like, can you make up your mind? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to get make something happen? Do you want me to listen? I don't get what you're trying to communicate. Just tell me what you want.
Yeah, I think that would help. Like, I just want you to listen. I think that that's good. But then there's a lot of things going on. I could just see myself like, okay, I'm just listening. And then I'm planning what I'm going to do after you're done talking.
When you don't want me to listen right. No more, I can go and ask.
Because I don't have to answer. So I'm just thinking of, I don't have to let you know that I'm really paying attention.
Totally. If there's too much space in that, it's like, oh, that's danger for our minds.
Then I'm saying, you really want me to listen?
You know, it's funny though. Patty can read it on my face so quickly now. She's like, oh, you've already left the conversation. I can tell. And she'll just say that, you know, kind of sarcastically. And then that's when I get, oh yeah, I just did. She's right. So then it brings me back into the conversation. Okay. Stay present. Stay listening. So that happens too, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because one of the meditations we did out in San Francisco was done by Helen Palmer. And she sits down with a panel of sevens, just like we're up here. And she said, we're going to start off with a meditation. It was specific to each type. She says, all right, take a few deep breaths in and down. You're sitting at a table and you're having quite an enjoyable conversation. The conversation is so interesting and you are just wrapped into it. You're just pulled into it. But then after a few moments, you realize you're getting bored. And so you evacuate. You just leave the room. And your body's still there, but your head is long gone. And you're out in your plans, and you're enjoying the plans. But you're good at being able to just keep nodding and smiling. And actually, I mean, I just about burst out laughing. And everybody else is quiet, saying, oh my goodness, I've done that so many. But this is the first time I'd ever heard that description. I've done that so many times, been guilty of that so many times. But then she says, see if you can come back to the conversation. So that became like the pattern of the exercise is bringing your head back into the space. Because you know you're not going to be able to keep it permanently from ever doing that. So you show yourself grace. Like you're going to do that. Just have some cues, reminders, mechanisms to bring yourself back into conversation. But that was a very helpful thing, I think, is just what you'd said earlier with that other piece. So, well, that's a wrap for tonight. Thank you all.
Well, that concludes season two, and thank you so much for joining us. It's an honor to get to share this space with you, the sacred space of growth and transformation. Once again, you can join us at our Facebook page, the Enneagram Panels Podcast. You can connect with Joel at www.joelhubbard.com. You can connect with me at www.jimzartman.com. This podcast is produced by Talkie Records Studio in Lynn, Massachusetts, and made possible by Vine 39 Church in Stoneham, Massachusetts. All music is copyright Jim Zartman. And please leave us a review on iTunes to help people find the show. We will be back before long.